from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Royteam.
Good morning, happy Wednesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. It is a beautiful morning outside our studio on the shores of Lake Union. How's it looking in Tacoma right now?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Are you thinking about moving down here? Is that what you're asking me? Because it's beautiful down here.
People in Tacoma
get mad at me. They get mad. They say, gee, stop getting on the radio telling folks how beautiful it is down here. Ursula, are you thinking about it?
There was a moment there last night I was wondering, am I going to have to move? Will I need it? But no. I still have hope in Seattle.
I can't wait till we talk about this, and I can't wait for Chef to weigh in. I'm going to move if crowd. We'll talk about that in a second, but let's get to it. Ursula's top five news stories of the day, brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
And the reason you ask this is because the ballots are still being counted, but it does look like former Seattle City Council President Bruce Harrell is going to be facing off with current Council President Lorena Gonzalez. As of this morning, Harrell is leading the 15-candidate field with 38% of the vote.
The city is starving for effective leadership right now, and we think that we present the answers that they've been looking for.
Although Lorena Gonzalez was behind Harrell by 10 percentage points, she was optimistic last night.
It is time for a mayor who's going to center working people and our issues in City Hall. And that is what tonight represents.
The big upset could be in the race for Seattle City Attorney, as we hear from Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott.
Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes in a tight battle to not only secure a fourth term, but survive the primary at all. With just over 18% of ballots in, Holmes sits at second place with 28,000 votes, barely above Nicole Thomas Kennedy and trailing leader Ann Davison by a couple thousand votes.
In the city council races, Fremont Brewery owner Sarah Nelson is leading with 42%. She's going to go head-to-head with activist and attorney Nikita Oliver, who has 35%. And in the other council position, incumbent Teresa Mosqueda is easily heading to November with nearly 55% of the vote. And her nearest challenger is an engineer named Kenneth Wilson, who has 18%. What did you think of when you saw the results coming in and the voter turnout?
First of all, the voter turnout was Charles Barkley terrible. It's absolutely terrible when it comes to that. In 2019, the voter turnout for this in King County was 35%. In 2021, King County has 24%. And we could do that again. In 2019, the primary had 21% in Pierce County. And in 2021, just now, it had 13%. So we are clearly seeing, Ursula, that there are a lot of folks that do not care about the primary. We'll get to that in a second, but let's talk about what I think what's going on, especially here in Seattle. Bruce Harrell being the front runner in that situation, I do believe when it's all said and done in November that he will be the guy. I think he will win that race. That's number one. Number two, when it comes to the race between Sarah Nelson and Nikita Oliver, that right there is going to be a close race right there. But this is one of those where I believe more of the, you guys aren't going to like this, but get ready. This is where I believe that this might be an advantage for Nikita Oliver going forward, because I think more people will vote in November, and I think most of those voters will probably go for her. And the one thing that I think is going to happen, I do believe, Ursula, that the incumbent, Pete Holmes, I think is going to be a down ghost Frazier. Down goes Frazier. I do not think he wins that. I think
is it Joe Frazier. Sorry,
what did I say?
Yeah, I said is that as if just in case anyone doesn't know what you're referring to. Was that?
Okay. So, anyways, I do believe that he's probably going to lose that one. I think Ann is going to win that one, and here's why. I think this is one of those things where people are like, "Yo, we want to see change in that department." Not to say they don't want to see change in other things, but I think directly with that, I think that's going to be a tough battle for him. What do you got?
First of all, on turnout, for as much outrage as we hear on a daily basis, the turnout was even more abysmal than I thought. than I feared.
Right.
So you're telling me that in King County, one in four people, not even one in four people, voted. 24%. You are leaving it up to one. If there's a group of four of you, you're leaving it up to one person to decide for all four. That, to me, is frightening. Secondly, when it comes to change, the people who did vote, now I understand that the more progressive voters, the younger voters, did come out in the end, and that's why there was a bit of a surge.
Right.
I still believe that what I am seeing here, and this is from starting with, let's say, the city attorney's race, where right. the incumbent, someone who's been there for 12 years, is in a three-way tie with a Republican attorney, by the way, and I never, up until this year, have ever shared how I vote. I voted for her. I'm not happy with what Pete Holmes has done. So I voted for her against someone who Pete Holmes is in the middle. If you think Pete Holmes is extremely leftist, the other candidate is even more to the left of him. I think that we need some moderating forces. It is why I voted for Bruce Harrell. I was interested in some of the other candidates. I thought that Art Langley had some interesting ideas. I had Lance Randall. I also thought he had some interesting ideas, but they had no chance. So for me, voting for Bruce Harrell, and I hope that he is the winner, and the reason I say that, and I don't look at it as, oh, we want more of the same. No, we don't want what's currently happening. And at least when Bruce Harrell was in the city council, he was a moderating voice. He does have a proven track record of being able to work with different sides and different viewpoints. We cannot be going in the same direction that we have been. And I'm just so disappointed that people didn't show up. And I'm hoping that they show up big time. I also didn't vote for the incumbent, Teresa Mosqueda, because I'm so unhappy with the city council right now. So I voted for that engineer who will probably be the one who's facing off with her. I knew very little about him, but the little that I was able to look online, I was like, well, he sounds reasonable. And when it comes to Sarah Nelson, I hope that her voice is even more elevated. Now, she is described as a progressive. What I like about her is that she is a business owner. She's not just coming out of nowhere. She worked in Richard Conlin's, a former council member's, administration. So she knows some of the workings. And again, what I think has been lacking, this at least gives me hope. So you asked me, am I ready to move just yet? No. My husband was born and raised in Seattle. We own a home in Seattle. My boys were born and raised in Seattle. I do still love this city. Yeah, what happens in this city does affect everyone else in this region, which is why, again, if we're unhappy, we have to be showing up at the ballot box. We have to. So I just beg you that if you sat out this one in August for whatever reason, maybe you were out of town, whatever the reason, we can't see a repeat in November, even though it's an off year. And I'm just hoping that, you know, people are exhausted and people were, you know, doing their thing because we're finally reopened. But I'm just shocked that as much anger as people say they have about the situation, that so few people turned out to vote. It is so dangerous around the King County Courthouse now. The sheriff has told many of her staff members to work from home until it's safe to return. Last week, as you know, a courthouse employee was assaulted inside the courthouse restroom. A sheriff's deputy heard her cries for help. A registered sex offender was arrested and charged. In a letter to her staff yesterday, Sheriff Mitzi Johanknik said, effective immediately, because of the unsafe environment around the courthouse, administration, parking garage, and correction facilities, and concerns from labor unions, we're now going to be returning to 100% remote telework for professional staff members who do not routinely interact with the public. Cairo 7 TV spoke to this former Bellevue police detective as he was walking into the courthouse.
It's a hassle carrying a gun. Even retired, I can still carry it, but I have to check it in. but I don't trust walking around here because I feel I'm going to get mugged.
And he says he understands why courthouse workers don't feel safe.
This city has gone downhill. I've been here since 1982, and it's sad that it's where it's at today. Totally. It's disgusting.
So when you see that the sheriff has now asked her courthouse employees to stay home, what are you thinking?
That I'm becoming cynical every single day. I pop open this microphone and read these stories and talk radio every single day. I am getting to the point where I'm losing my damn mind. I just really don't understand how in the world that we are just allowing folks to just do whatever they want, whenever they want. I just don't get it. I don't get how the East Precinct was left vacant and how they left that in 2020. I don't understand. And by the way, no, I do understand the sheriff saying, hey, I want to let you guys know that I don't feel that is safe. And I'm encouraging our staff and those that aren't police officers necessarily. I understand that you're telling them that it's not safe. I just don't understand why this is going to be going to continue. Like, if it's not safe, then make it safe. Oops, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get there. I'm just losing my mind.
But imagine if you actually worked there, G. So these, as people say, this isn't new. The part of it being dangerous, people have to walk the gauntlet every time they go into the courthouse, but it's just gotten that much worse. And there's a very visible problem right next to it. And people now, I mean, the sheriff's department is saying it's not safe. What do you think a potential juror is going to say? Are you really going to try to force someone to be on a jury when you can't ensure their safety while walking into the courthouse? It's taken way too long. And again, I look at this story and say, there's outrage about this, yet no one shows up to vote. As we have been reporting, the Delta variant continues to sweep through our state, and now hospitals are seeing a big spike in COVID patients. In Snohomish County, there are only 5 ICU beds left in the entire county. And at this rate, Valerie Hodson with Providence Everett says they may soon have to set up makeshift ICU units in other parts of the hospital.
We get creative and we send nurses to where they need to go, and it's a big jigsaw puzzle on a daily basis.
Now, there are now 17 patients in the ICU at Providence Everett, more than 4 times the number of COVID patients at this same time last month. Meanwhile, Microsoft is now requiring vaccinations for all employees beginning next month. And the company is also pushing back its planned reopening date for U.S. offices to October, which is a month later than they originally planned. So my question for you, though, G,
yeah,
as we see what's going on with hospitals, we
yes.
see what companies are doing.
Yes.
Do you think it's time for all companies to
yes.
impose, you're not even wasting time, mandatory vaccines?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, explain.
We're going backwards. We're now, I'm back wearing masks in the stores. Just had a conversation in my household. I think I'm about to chill now on going to restaurants. My son, it's now mandatory for them back in Ohio to wear masks in their facility. I have a friend right now who is trying not to be on a ventilator right now. He's in the hospital right now. He is doing breathing machines right now to try to prevent him from getting on the ventilator. The hospitals are starting to get filled with capacity with numbers again. We're still talking about this. And if anybody's listening right now, if you're exhausted, we're all exhausted. We're all tired. And you know what's about to happen in a few days, Ursula? Excuse me, in a few weeks? Back to school. And here we go again. We are potentially on our way to this whole thing. Right now, you always like me to do numbers, so I brought numbers for you, Ursula. 23% of adults between the ages of 18 and 34 said that they will not get vaccinated. In addition, 21% of Gen Z and millennial respondents said that they haven't decided whether that they want to get vaccinated. You know what I can't believe? I can't believe the Pop the Molly and I'm sweating generation does not want to get a vaccine.
Wait.
Not some folks got that on the first try. I know I might have to explain that further, but for anybody that got that on the first try, enjoy that one.
The
Pop the Molly and I'm sweating generation does not want to get the vaccine. It's weird.
That is, okay. There is irony in that. Again, and I don't like to ever generalize, etc., but I get your point. So here's where I'm at. I think companies should have the right, and they do, to determine whether they're going to impose a mandatory vaccination thing. But the only thing I know for sure is that this time around, we cannot shut down businesses. We cannot shut down schools. Hospitals are filling up again. So the one thing with now that we have the vaccine available and they're asking everybody to wear masks, whether you've been vaccinated or not, I'm going to continue wearing masks, even though I've been vaccinated. I'm going to do what I can. I'm not going to stop living. However, I think that we don't shut down businesses. That means basically if you are in that category, what you just described, that generation where they're refusing no matter what, even though there's really no good reason, then you're the one who should be shut down. You're the one who should not be going out. Instead of forcing the businesses to shut down, no, maybe you need to sit it out this time around until it's under control.
We're on our way, Ursula. I really cannot believe. And then, you know, we won't talk about it, but, you know, Garth Brooks is he was supposed to be here on September 4th.
Yep.
He's probably not going to be participating. We have football season that's on the way. I mean, as of right now, everybody's supposed to be in attendance for football games. But just what if? And if you're listening right now, if you're a Seahawks season ticket holder or you're a Husky season ticket holder or you love going to these type of events, are you really ready to have the possibility of not being able to go to these games again?
Exactly.
Seriously?
Exactly. I didn't mean that for emphasis, but exactly. You're absolutely right. I know. It's just the idea that, okay, I didn't think that we would get through all of last summer having to talk about this, but this year again, that's just crazy. Okay, still ahead. Are you going to have a hard time getting an appointment with a vet when your pet gets sick? And when you get sick, how long will you have to wait for your medical care? We're going to talk about that next on the G and Ursula Show. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. Happy Wednesday to all of you. Thank you so much for hanging out with us this morning. We say it often, G, how much we love our show community. And I was reminded of that last night on our show page on Facebook.
How long did you stay up?
I stayed up all night. And I love the discussions. I love the interactions amongst our listeners. Just very respectful. Weighing in on a question that I had posed based on what I saw yesterday in Seattle's University District. It was just a very sad sight, and I posted pictures, and I asked, what can we do? I ask you, if you haven't already joined us on our Facebook page, just take a minute right now and do it, because I want to talk about this coming up in the 10 o'clock hour in reference to elections, and then when we come across scenes like this all around the city, all around the region, and what do you do? And I love the discussion. Basically, I shouldn't beat around the bush. Basically, it was a homeless man sleeping on a sidewalk in the U District, his leg sticking out into the street. And I talked to an officer who was nearby, talking to a driver who couldn't park there because the man's leg was in the street and it was a commercial zone. She had a commercial parking sticker. And I talked to the officer who basically just said, there's really nothing I can do. So that man is laying there on the street, on the sidewalk, partially on the street. It's dangerous. So go onto our Facebook page. Please weigh in. And then I want you guys to be part of our discussion coming up at 10 o'clock. But right now, we are going to talk about, where are all the workers? That is the question that so many industries are asking today. And when it comes to your pets, where are all the veterinarians? Cairo Radio's Nicole Jennings has been looking into why, if your pet needs care right now, you could be looking at a very long wait. Hey, Nicole.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. So tell us, what's going on?
Well, this is kind of alarming for pet owners like both of you and like me. If you have an emergency with your pet, you could seriously be looking at a 6-hour or longer wait at any of our local pet emergency centers. And if you just want to make an appointment just to get your pet a checkup, you could be looking at several weeks. It's just almost impossible to get seen at a local vet clinic anywhere.
And why is this happening?
Well, it's kind of multifold, the reason. So one is that the number of people getting pets during the pandemic just absolutely skyrocketed. Everyone wanted that quarantine cat or dog, which is, it's great to have a pet to comfort you during the quarantine. I mean, I got my cat just a couple of weeks before the pandemic, just by total coincidence, and it's great to have a pet during the pandemic. But that also means, of course, more pet owners out there bringing pets in, more appointments needed. It just drives up the numbers of the demand. But then also, vet school enrollment has been down. There have been vet staffing shortages going on for years now of veterinarians and vet techs as well. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons why this is happening. And I'm actually going to be doing a follow-up story on this today, specifically looking at why the staffing shortages are such an issue. I'm going to be talking to a prominent vet on Mercer Island. But basically, it's kind of the same thing that we talked about with the healthcare industry a couple weeks back, that there is just major burnout and not necessarily a lot of support for the emotional and mental health issues that you get from working in these trauma situations.
Well, you know, I'm right when you start talking about those not in school as much and to be a vet. How much do these vet techs get paid? Do you have any idea what the salary range is for them?
I looked it up yesterday briefly. I believe it's quite good around the country. Obviously, you know, a vet is going to be paid more, but
how about the vet techs?
The vet techs, it looked like yesterday when I looked it up, it was somewhere around the $20 an hour range and up.
Right. Okay.
Well, that's not going to help right now, unfortunately. And so it's like, you know, we talk about long waits to get into an ER or waits to get into see your doctor in some cases. And now we're talking about even your pets can't afford to get sick.
And I will say on the salary end, a lot of places are increasing salaries to try to attract more people. Seattle Humane, for instance, has a shortage of vet techs right now. They're offering signing bonuses, tuition reimbursement. So there are a lot of programs out there that are quite lucrative. But yeah, it's an enrollment issue.
Nicole, we appreciate your time. That is Kyra Radio's Nicole Jennings. And we'll be talking to you soon because I know you're also looking into some issues with particular hospitals that are closing their ERs, which doesn't sound so good either. So we'll be checking back in with you soon. Thank you, Nicole.
Thanks very much.
I mentioned, encouraged everybody to get on our Facebook page, and I see that a lot of people are doing that. And again, if you haven't, please join us. We love to have you on our Facebook community as well. And want you to weigh in. And I also want you just to see, and I don't want to brag about our Facebook page, but I just want to see you to see how you can have social media that is constructive, that is respectful. Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't that something that you've noticed that is, I think, remarkably different?
Yeah. I just wasn't up late at night watching it like you were because you were responding, Ursula. But what I did see, and you're absolutely right, is I saw some of the thoughtful replies to this. I saw people saying kind of what you and I have been saying, how complex of an issue this is, talking about things like this doesn't happen overnight. This homeless problem that we have. The housing crisis that we have, all of these things are also happening because of the way things were handled years ago, right? And you cannot forget those things. And so there's a lot of times, often there's people that say, we just need to get over it. We need to move past them. Okay. Well, it's right here in our face right now. It's right here in our face. Mental health issues, our drug issues. What did we do years ago? What did we do when people had drug problems 30 years ago? the crack epidemic. What did America do when people had a crack problem? They arrested them. That's how we fought those things. So now here we are today, and it's not just a, it's not a crack problem. We have heroin, we have pills, we have, it's impacting so many. So now what you used to do years ago, you can't do those things today. But then again, today we still have some of these leaders are in our federal government that are still there from yesteryear, that Joe Biden was a part of, that all them folks is still in house right now. So what I'm saying, Ursula, is this: people are starting to understand that this homeless crisis that we are going through can't just have money thrown at it. You can't do what you did years ago. And so what I love about our Facebook community is that I am seeing more and more people start to understand that. You see, a lot of times says, we just got to lock them up. Like, hold up. Do you really think that you can just lock up everybody that's out there that's homeless? You really think that's going to fix it? Or do you really think that just build a few, get a few hotels and some places along in the community? You think housing them? What about staffing? So again, this is complex, and this really has to do with when you have leadership, it shows you how important it is for leaders to be all on the same page and then do the best that you can with this crisis, Ursula.
Well, absolutely. And how do you get good leadership? You vote. Okay, still ahead.
Yeah. You had to go there, didn't you?
Yeah. Okay, so still ahead. Spiffy's is closing. Do you remember that restaurant?
Sure.
Well, Spiffy's got lots and lots of fines last year. Is that why they closed? We'll look into that. You're listening to the G and Ursula Show.
It is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Wednesday to all of you. Coming up at 10 o'clock in three things that you need to know. President Biden is leading from behind on a particular issue, and I have to call a spade a spade. We discussed that at 10 o'clock. But right now, Ursula, a restaurant down south by the name of Spiffy's. What's going on with that?
Well, if you remember, Spiffy's made headlines after the owner refused to follow government health mandates and allowed indoor dining last year. This is a Chehalis restaurant in Lewis County. And now the owner has announced that he is going to be closing permanently. 81-year-old Rod Samuelson was on the Dory Monson show yesterday, and he said it makes sense to shut down now.
We closed because of a couple of reasons. One, we can't get employees. That's probably the big one. It is we're losing waitresses now. One of our waitresses is a school teacher. She's going back to school. Another one's had cancer, and she's just wore out and good legitimate reasons, but we just can't find waitresses.
And he also says he's having trouble getting food deliveries in time. So again, he is closing down. As far as those fines, which at one point was close to $500,000, and I think they're now at about $250,000. Samuelson believes, he says, he was targeted because he embarrassed the governor by flouting the government mandates, and he thinks he's not going to have to pay now that he's closing. But we did check with L&I, and the state says discussions are still ongoing.
So the two examples that he gave for not finding employees and those to work, the one was that one of his staff, one of his servers, is going to go and teach and become a teacher,
okay,
which is great.
Yeah.
And the one he gave an example of one of his employees having cancer, which is unfortunate. So those are the two examples that he gave for why he can't find workers? Okay, let me just put that to the side. I don't think that, in my heart of hearts, I don't think Spiffy's, the owner, is losing a bit of sleep. As a matter of fact, he probably made very good money in 2020. He made money because he defied orders, kept open, number one. And number two, a lot of these owners were able to take advantage of the PPP loans. And I have spoken to many owners who made very good money in 2020. Now, something tells me, again, that he's not really losing that much sleep.
He mentioned it, G. I mean, he mentioned in the interview with Dory that he said that Dory said, I feel like I'm sadder than you. I don't want to misquote because I didn't actually hear this, but Chef, you heard that part of the interview.
Yeah, and he said, yeah, you know what, Dory, I'm pretty happy with what I've done, and I'm not losing any sleep at night. So you guys are on the same page.
Oh, okay. So I'm on this. Because, well, isn't that something? Well, I never knew that the owner of Spiffy's and myself would be on the same page. There you go.
Well, the interesting thing is I've seen, and this is maybe indicative of how people just read the headline and make an assumption, because everywhere it was shared on social media, it was, oh, you know, something, something, Inslee, Kingsley, you know, this is just why, you know, this is why this owner is not leaving because of the fines. This owner is leaving because he can't get people to work there. The same people he said he was so loyal to, which is why he claimed he was defying the orders, to the point where when Lewis County was having high case rates, people were eating indoors maskless, and people were so determined to let that restaurant stay open, they had armed people, citizens, there, some of them chasing down L&I employees who were going in there just doing their job. And now this owner, I mean, good, he deserves to retire. He's 81 years old. But I think people just are quick to assume that, hey, it's because the government was so unfair to him and he got all those fines and he was forced to shut down. No. Apparently, no one wants to work there.
360 texts in and said, I listened to the whole interview and, yeah, he said he's just fine and not losing any sleep at all. I didn't listen to the interview and I said I had a very good feeling that that's the case. And isn't the man like 80 years old?
Yeah, I just said he's 81.
Can I clear up something really quick?
Huh.
When it comes to all those fines, when you're a business owner, you form what's called an LLC, a limited liability corporation, which means that Spiffy's restaurant, the LLC that owns that, will be facing $400,000 fines. He will not, as the owner, which means when he closes his business, those fines will likely go away because his business will be dissolved and bankrupt.
Yeah, he said the governor's welcome to buy it if he wants. But he's not sure he could even get $250,000 for it. So we'll see. But anyway, yeah. Spiffy's, a family restaurant, I know a lot of people went there at some point in time, is shutting down, but not for the reasons that you may think.
But made sure to get that talking point in of, I can't find any workers. Still ahead, President Biden is leading from behind on a very particular issue, and I got to call a spade on this. It's G and Ursula.